yourself arrive in your seat. Start at the crown of your head and scan down your body, pausing wherever you need to, staying as long as is necessary. Just relaxing, letting go of tension. Once you've scanned all the way down, then just as slowly starting to scan back up, brightening the energy. Pausing wherever is needed. Deep sense of ease. When you finish scanning up your body, then come to your breath. And start with the feeling of breath at your chest. Your whole chest. The lungs as they rise and fall. Not making it some tiny point, but a bigger space. And there's no effort. The breath happens on its own. And if your mind feels balanced here, bright, not sleepy, clear, And stay with the breath here. If you feel like you need a finer focus, then bring the focus to the tip of the nose, the breath moving there. And if you try the tip of the nose and it feels tight, maybe you feel tightness in your eyes or your forehead, your chest, then go back to the breath at the chest. Feel tension building back up in the rest of the body. Bring your focus there for a few moments, releasing the tension, and then coming back to the breath. Bring your mind really clearly and brightly to the breath wherever you're focused the last few moments. Depending on the best attention that you can gather at this point. And once you have that really clear, crisp focus, then releasing the meditation. Expanding your awareness through your whole body, out into the world around you. And starting to move like a dedication when you're ready.
What?
Oh, yeah, I'm recording. I thought you said something about she went to court today.
Oh, no. I think she's in retreat, actually.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool. Your name again?
Nilesh.
Nilesh. Okay, Heather. Okay. Okay. Oh, I wonder if I hit this if it'll like. Class 2 of What's Next, a Deep Dive into Death and Rebirth. And it's Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. So tonight we're going to talk about the formless realm, the five births, and the ways of birth. And before we start, guess what we're going to do?
Review.
Review, yes. So what is the text that we're studying, or the book that we're studying, the root text?
The Abhidharma Kosha.
Abhidharma Kosha, yep. Does anyone know who wrote it? Close. Yep. Master Vasubandhu. So Master Asanga is Master Vasubandhu's half-brother, so that's why Asanga is a close guest. And approximately what were his dates? Mm-hmm. 350 AD. And then what is the commentary that we're studying? That's like the unpacking of the original text.
Illumination of the Path to Freedom.
Yep. Illumination or Lamp on the Path to Freedom. I love all these names. They're so great. Does anyone happen to know the Tibetan? It's not actually hard for a Tibetan, but it's not easy to remember, though. Tarlam Selje. It almost sounds like Illumination on the Path to Freedom, doesn't it? Tarlam Selje, like, it, I don't know. And who wrote this? Who's the commentary by? We're on the 14th one right now. Mm-hmm. The first Dalai Lama. Anybody know his Tibetan name?
Gyalwa Gendun
Drupa. Yep. Gyalwa Gendun Drupa. So he's the first Dalai Lama and a student of Jason Kapa, who is the founder of the Galupa lineage, and is right up there. Does anyone know his dates? They're kind of close to Jason Kapa's dates. 1391 to 1474. So he wasn't really one of Jason Kapa's main disciples, because you can see by the so he was born 1391. Jason Kapa is born 1357. So there's not, and he died 1419. So Gyalwa Gendun Drupa didn't study with him that long, but wasn't one of his main disciples, but he was a student of his. So we're going through all of this about death, dying, rebirth, all of these things, so that it'll be of use one day when we do die. And We don't know when that day is. And about 30 seconds after we die, all the things that we worry about all the time are not going to matter at all. We're not going to care. We're not even going to know about them, about our job, whatever small things we're worrying about day to day, our house, our family, our kids, everything will totally be gone. Our whole life will be completely different. So we're trying to prepare for that, because that is the one thing that will definitely happen to every single one of us, to every human being on this planet. That's the one thing that will definitely happen, and mostly in our culture, nobody prepares for it, which is insane, because we prepare for everything. Even things that are never going to happen, we're constantly preparing for in our mind, going over and over what's going to happen when this certain thing that never does comes about. So that's what we're doing this course for. So we'll go through all the realms we can see, and we'll go through the ones that we can't. We'll go through death meditation and about the bardo, and we won't go through all of that in this class, but throughout the course we will. So you'll have a really deep understanding of all of these ideas according to Tibetan Buddhism. So we're studying from one of the original sources for this teaching, which is the Abhidharma Kosha. Does anyone remember what kosha means? Do you know what kosha means? I don't think I asked for the English as Abhidharma Kosha. So kosha means treasure house. It's a book that's like a treasure house that contains all this great knowledge. So you can think about going into a house that's filled with treasure. Maybe jewels everywhere. That's what the book is like. It's like finding this amazing treasure and all of these jewels all over the place. And you can't believe your good fortune to have found this. And in the monastery, they'll spend 2 to 10 years on this text. So I'm trying to remember the other term that Venerable Tenzin was teaching us. So Geshe Michael uses the term Hinayana, but I can't remember what she said. I think she just called it like the Pali Canon or something like that. So it's a different school's text. It's not going to have all of the same ideas that the Galupa lineage has about karma and emptiness, and it's also totally correct and very important to learn. So it doesn't mean that it's wrong, it's just some of the teachings are just going to be different. And it's not popular to teach this chapter in the West. We talked about this last week. Because people say it has all these weird ideas of what the world is shaped like, and we'll get into that more. And most people just kind of disregard it. Which, if you want a full religion to live on, and say you believe that the Buddha was an enlightened being, everything that he taught was for a reason and was part of the path. So when you start just throwing out parts of it that don't fit the times or you think people aren't going to like, then you end up with a path that's not complete, and it's just like baking a cake or cupcakes and you leave out one of the ingredients. There's no ingredients that are optional. You can use more or less sugar, maybe, if you want to. But if you just leave something out, you don't get the right result. So the same thing with a religion. So that's why it's important to study these chapters that maybe aren't so exciting or interesting in the same way as other teachings are. Like there's just a different type of feeling that goes along with studying compassion than studying death and the realms of existence. It just has like a different feeling even when you hear it or you think about it in your mind. So most people disregard this chapter, and they don't like the explanation. It's very hard to read because it's full of all of these descriptions of what happens when you see emptiness directly or when you see ultimate reality directly in meditation. And I actually haven't read those descriptions, but they're basically trying to describe something that's indescribable. So if you've read any of the readings, which I can tell you the website if you want to find the reading.
Thank you.
You get a taste of how confusing they are. And so the parts that are on the explanation or the description of seeing emptiness directly, I would imagine are probably even more confusing. So it's going into that description because that's something that we'll see directly in meditation one day if we haven't already. And so it's preparing us for that, which is kind of like the first time that we're on our way out of suffering. That's basically what seeing the direct perception of emptiness is doing. That's like kind of the gateway. And then we're on this conveyor belt completely out of it. So this whole chapter, it's very deep, and it's written by an incredibly realized person. So why does it seem that there's all these ridiculous ideas about the world in this chapter, in the Abhidharma Kosha? And we maybe haven't gotten to a lot of them yet, but the idea is, basically comes down to the main teaching in Buddhism of, I mean, you could say it's the main, of karma and emptiness. So it's basically because of emptiness that we would be studying this. We assume that the world looks the way we think it looks, and that 100 years from now, people will see the world the exact same way that we do. We can take pictures from a satellite, and so it must look this way, and that's the only way it can look, and that's not true. If karma and emptiness are true, if they are the way the world works, then the world can look exactly the way the Abhidharma Kosha explains it. The world can look anyway. That's how we can one day become an enlightened angel living in our paradise. That's how that can happen. If anything was set, it would be really hard to change this into a body of light and, you know, my thoughts and my mind into that of an enlightened being who's only serving people, only helping all beings. So that's the purpose. And that's why we can read this. And when we get into more of the description, you'll see what I mean. I don't know if it'll happen today, but that's why some of it just sounds like, it sounds elementary, like whoever wrote it, I think this is like a common reaction to it. It sounds remedial, maybe. It sounds like, oh, they don't know because they know this was 2,500 years ago. Like they didn't have science. So that's what it sounds like. But if it's an enlightened being who is teaching all of this and writing all of it down, they can see all time and space. It doesn't matter that we think of them as stuck in that one time. And they can see exactly what we need to learn. So it's good to suspend the ideas that we think of as being the only way. Like, it wasn't so long ago that people thought the earth was flat. So, things change really quickly. Nothing's set in science. 20 years from now, 50 years from now, we might have a completely different idea. Who knows? So just having that idea of, I don't know for sure what the world looked like 50 years ago, 2,500 years ago, or what it could potentially look like if the different karmic seeds ripen in my mind. And that's the point of studying all these realms, too. That's how we could get to be born in all of the realms that we're going to study tonight, how all of us have different experiences within this realm. So the definition of the world is a very fluid thing, and we're just forced by our past karma to experience the world a certain way. And so does that mean that our perception of the world is invalid or not true? It doesn't at all. You can have two different valid perceptions of one object. Which we all know this. It maybe sounds kind of like kind of far out if we hear those words, but anytime you pick up a flavor of ice cream that you love and the person with you hates it, it's the same thing. You have two different realities and one object. So the basically, the world is the same way. It's very possible that different beings have a totally perception of our world, of right here, of what we're seeing now. Okay, so the universe is made up of three parts according to Buddhism. I think we went over these last week. Dukkham is the desire realm. So say Dukkham.
Dukkham.
Sukham is the form realm. Say Sukham.
Sukham.
And then Sukmekam is the formless realm. Say Sukmekam.
Sukmekam.
So there are the three realms of, those are the three realms of suffering existence. So just by saying that there is suffering existence, what does that imply? Yeah. So those are the three realms of suffering existence, and there are beings who are outside of suffering. And if you're in one of these three realms, then you're in suffering. So we're in the human realm. We're in suffering. I mean, all of us know this. So when you say samsara, it's basically defined as having to get old and die, which all of us are doing. No matter how much plastic surgery we get or vitamins we eat, how much we exercise, it doesn't matter. We all get old. We're all getting older, and we're all going to die too. So when we've reached nirvana, it's actually a change in our being, and we've escaped cyclic life. So that cycle of birth, living, death, bardo, birth, living, death, all of that, over and over and over and over. Same thing within, like, our lives that we're living now. Suffering over and over and over and over. And I think the longer we live, we get a sense that it's kind of the same suffering that's coming up all the time, too. Or the same flavor. So being in the desire realm means our main concerns are for food and sex. We're defined by very gross physical sensations. And a lot of our life is spent looking, smelling, hearing, being attracted to those objects. We have strong desire for nice physical objects, and then we want to get away from objects we don't like. So why are all of these called realms? So what do you think of when you hear realm? Like, what does it sound like that would be?
It sounds to me like a universe.
Like a different universe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like someplace other than here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or even like an empire. Back in the old times, they used to call them like the Knights of the Realm.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Anyone else have something to add?
Yeah, like a world. Its own world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sense that I get with realm, too. So you think of it a totally different place. So then, we're thinking that we're, like, traveling somewhere else. But really the way we travel is between these realms is mentally. So your mind enters a new level of subtlety. If you've reached a point where you are a heavy meditator, you would actually not eat much. You would disengage with a lot of physical objects. you'd be totally absorbed in another realm. Like if you're meditating and you got to the point where you're meditating in the form realm. So if you think about it like that, if you're meditating and your mind can go to the form realm, then it must be mental because your physical body isn't there. Your physical body is still here. So it's something to think about more. But it's not that we're going to another place. We could travel to another realm in our meditation in this life, and then just by being forced to see a different projection after we die as well. And I think we'll get into that a little bit tonight. So talking about the form realm, which we talked about last week a little bit too. Maybe 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 people can reach a level of the form realm in meditation. So they just crossed a border. It's not that they went anywhere different. I think it's a hard idea because we're not used to that sort of thing. Maybe the only place we really get a taste of that is in dreams. When we're dreaming, we are somewhere totally different. I mean, our body's still there, but it doesn't feel like that. So, if the meditator who's in the form realm could refine their focus even further, then, like to where they had no attachment to any physical things, they would reach the formless realm. And these are really just three different levels of being attached to the objects of the senses. The desire realm, the form realm, the formless realm. And people mistake the form realm for nirvana because it feels really good. I wouldn't know because I haven't been there. But it's good to hear all these warnings. Because what would be the problem with thinking that you're in nirvana when you're not yet?
You just stay there.
Yeah.
Motivation.
Yeah. You're like, I'm already done. I don't have to do anything. I've reached, if that was the goal, if your goal is nirvana. Or thinking that you're enlightened when you're not, then you wouldn't be working towards your enlightenment and actually getting closer and closer. You'd just be hanging out and kind of probably most likely wasting time. So even if you can reach these sorts of high realms of meditation, what's happening to your body while your mind is in these realms, it's still deteriorating. It's still getting older. You're still getting closer to death. So your body's still here. The meditator still suffer and die. And all of that nice meditation isn't doing anything. So just being able to travel between the three realms isn't that big of a deal. You may as well stay here where you can think clearly and you can practice and study and you can actually get out of the whole cycle. Okay, so the first realm we're going through tonight, not very long actually, are the hell realm. And this is a close-up picture of the Wheel of Life. So in another class we'll go through what all the hell realms are, but you can see different pictures there. You can see for sure the hot and the cold. And I mean, it's kind of hard for these to look that scary because they're so small too. So, anyways, there's 8 different hell realms, basically divided into hot hells and cold hells. So, can any of us see the hell realms? Anybody?
So, yeah, can you be in this form and be in hell?
Yeah. So I think there's, we might have talked about this last week too. I think there's an idea, and I've heard some teachers say that a hell realm is just an analogy for a really bad situation in this life, or you know, like I'm going through hell right now, that sort of thing. It's an analogy, and what the Abhidharma Kosha says is that's absolutely not true. The hell realm is a realm that you would go to, where you would go through being burned and dying over and over, and then you'd be revived, and then you'd be burned to death, die, and then revived. It's not just an analogy for going through a tough time. I don't know if that's what you were, if what you were saying, but that's what came to mind. And right now, I mean, none of us can see the hell realm right, the hell realms right now that I know of. I know I can't. But the Buddha or an enlightened being can take someone there and show them. So the purpose of that would be maybe the Buddha can see that that would really help somebody to see that, and then they would get themselves in gear and start studying really seriously after that. So that's the only reason I've heard of why that would happen. But for the most part, it's one that we can't see. So we mostly just use logic. And that would be what we were talking about before. And in a later class, we go through logical proofs of a lot of these realms. But basically that if everything's empty of any self-existence, it doesn't have to be any certain way, then any karmic seed that ripens forces us to see it in a certain way, then that would be the main proof that we could be forced to see ourselves in a hell realm. So it's kind of one to chew on. We'll discuss this one more. But in Buddhism, we're supposed to be really rational. So we'll prove that it's logical that a place like this does exist in more depth. But we're not going into it that deeply this week. And it is also true that all Buddhist enlightened beings have seen hells, and they have described it too. So they're describing the same thing. So right now is kind of like an introduction. And we just have to stay, mostly in Buddhism, you stay in the realm of proof. And there's different types of proofs. There's scriptural proof, logical proof, authoritative proof, and those are the proofs that we'll go into. We're gonna finish.
And now I was gonna say maybe being in a war, in the middle of war or some place.
Yeah, we can equate different things in this life for sure. Or like your car catches on fire, or you're burned alive in your house, or freezing on the top of a mountain or something like that. So there are ways where we can see how quickly our reality can switch. So that can kind of help to, like, whenever you've had something happen really quickly that's sort of like, oh, you know, that can happen. Or like you almost get in a car accident. You get a little glimpse of how karma can shift really quickly, and your reality can be completely different. I think we get that when someone close to us passes away, for sure with accidents, in my experience with car accidents, because they happen so quickly, it's like, it's such a shock. So yeah, we can get a sense of it with things in this life too, that we can see. So that one we can't see, but the others, well, the next two we can see. Next one is the animal realm. Whoa, look at that animal in the water. It's like a elephant dragon or something. I wonder what it is. All the other ones look like, you know, pretty normal. So, animals are the first realm. This is one that we can see. And as we mentioned a little bit last week, we glorify the idea of animals. We think of, you know, rabbits getting along together and fluffy little puppies and that sort of thing. But the Buddhist perception of animals is this horrifying realm of sheer terror all the time. Just terror of being eaten by the next biggest animal on the chain. And your whole being is trying to escape and stay safe. And we even see this in, you know, animals that we have as pets that maybe even they live just in the house. They get frightened and scared really easily. So it's not like, oh, I wish I was going to be reborn as a dog or something like that. No, it's not a good rebirth. It's filled with fear and, you know, anxiety and ignorance too. Like you're at the mercy of other beings. You don't know what's happening. It's not something that we want. So the only and of all of the animals, the ones that encounter human beings, a lot of them are tortured on top of that. Like made to work extremely hard or raised and then killed for their flesh. So in Buddhism, it's a terrifying existence. And then the next one up, human realm. And they divide the humans into four for the four continents. And we'll talk about this more. And then there's the Deva realm, or the God realm.
Are we going to talk about that today? The humans divided by continents? No?
Not today. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about the different ways of birth, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about the form realm, too. Mm-hmm. So the God realm is Deva in Sanskrit, or La in Tibetan. So HLA. So maybe you hear Geshe Michael, who originally taught all of these courses. I'm basically just teaching the courses that he taught and I took from Ami. So you'll hear people maybe call him, I guess if you listen to the recordings or if you've been to his teachings, Geshe La. So that's La, which is here. And the way he defines La is as angel. And so you can add that, you'll hear people add that, like in the Dharma community, onto the end of someone's name. So you could say, like, Brandy La. It sounds like LA, but it's HLA. Or Ami La. So basically, like Angel Ami, Angel Brandy. It's a really sweet thing. It's a really sweet honorific to use in a way. So, La in this sense is used to describe totally enlightened beings. They used to be like us, and then they meditated really nicely and they became a god. Or an angel. And then there are other kind of laws that are inside suffering. So it's a little confusing. They spend their whole existence in a super worldly pleasure beings. So that would be this god realm. Like the Greek gods sending down rain when they feel like it. But then these beings die a horrible death. And it's more suffering in those last few days than all of the, I think it's millions of years that they live, or a million years than the million years of happiness that they had before that. So you kind of just suck up all of your, you use up all the good seeds, and then you don't have any good left, and you die this terrible death. Both the form and formless realms are occupied by laws. But in the desire realm, there's six types we're not going into tonight. And then number five is form realm. And this consists of 17 different sections. So this realm, which we were talking about a little bit earlier, it's a result of meditation. So what determines if you're going to reach the form realm or not is if you're like one of the people in India or Tibet or wherever you can think of who spend much of your life meditating. Your mind's not attached anymore. You can get into meditation where you have no attachment to food or smells or sounds. And your mind is in the form realm. Then when the body dies, that being takes birth in the form realm. And they live for millions of years. They can emanate whatever they want and enjoy it. And like the picture, the form realm is incredibly beautiful, but you don't stay there permanently. We went over most of this last week, didn't we?
Yes, but they're not enlightened, right?
Right. Yeah, they're not.
This is the one that it's quite dangerous. I mean, it's a very nice place, but it's...
Yeah, you're just sucking up all these good karmic seeds that you planted. Because you get there by not having done any bad deeds your whole life in the previous life. So what would it be in that previous life? What is it about meditation that would prevent you from doing killing, stealing, etc., etc.?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just don't have the opportunity. You don't have the time to do it. You're sitting in your meditation. So the difference is in a Buddha paradise, you don't die, you don't age, and you don't have suffering. In the form realm, you still suffer and die. And just before they die, for the first time they start to age, the karma wears off from having been so good in their past life. They start to get very ugly, they smell, their hair falls out, the other devas don't want to be around them anymore. They avoid them. So the mental suffering that comes in those last few days is way worse than the pleasure that came before. So it's not our goal. In the form realm, they use up all their good karma, and then they go straight down to hell realm after that. So there's a causal form realm and a resultant form realm. What would you think would be the cause?
For
being born in the form realm, like we were talking about.
Well, the meditation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meditation, and then the result. So the causal form realm is meditation.
Uh-huh.
That's the cause. And the resultant form realm is being born in the form realm. I think we'll take a break here and then come back after.
Okay. Would you like a tea?
Sure. Okay. Okay, so we're going through the different realms. Who remembers the first one we went through today?
The Hell Realm?
Yep, Hell Realm.
Realm.
And then number two?
Human Realm?
That was
Animal.
Animal Realm, yep. The third?
Human Realm.
The fourth?
God.
Yep. And now we're on the fifth. Form Realm. And I think we just finished this. So we're going on to six. No, we're not. We're going on to the levels of the formless realm. So, like we were saying, the form realm, you're born there as a result of your meditation in the form realm. And then if you go higher and higher, then you're meditating in the formless realms, and that's how you get born in the formless realm as well. So the four levels of the formless realm and the results are based on the meditation that you do. So the first one, say Namkate.
Namkate.
Namkate. Limitless space. The second, say Namshete.
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 Limitless awareness or consciousness. The third, Chiyangme.
Chiyangme.
Chiyangme. Nothing at all. And the fourth is Tsitse.
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 And this is the peak of suffering existence. So in the formless realm, there's no one physical place where the formless realm exists. The formless realm for a being is wherever it dies. There's no place. So being in the formless realm, the beings there, they have only minds, no bodies. So by putting your mind in a formless realm meditation, you create the cause to be born there, just like in the form realm, how we were talking about. So how would you get to the four different parts of the formless realm? Through different levels of meditation. So there was... My cursor just did something crazy. So there's a story of a monk from China who came to Tibet and tried to teach Chiyangme, which is the nothing at all. And that meditation was to sit and think about nothing at all. And there was an Indian master named Master Kamala Shila who debated him, and he won. And so this Chinese monk was sent back home, and this idea of meditation, the Chiyangmei, was completely rejected. So that's how I've heard one or two other stories like this, where two different traditions would debate, and then that's how the Tibetans, in this case, would decide which meditation they were going to focus on, whichever one won the debate. So it is useful to get up to being able to meditate on the first part of the form realm, because that's where you can see emptiness directly or see how ultimate reality is working. And then after you see how everything's working directly, at that point you're just on your way out. You're not doing those same bad deeds anymore that you were before, because you've seen exactly how things work, so you understand the right things to do. Whereas at this point, I know I don't understand the right things to do. Maybe in some intellectual way I do, but my instincts are still to do the wrong thing most of the time. If someone gets angry at me, instinct is usually to yell back. If someone cuts me off in traffic, instinct is like anger comes up, that sort of thing. But then after we see emptiness directly, or we see ultimate reality, we see how things truly work in the world in deep meditation, we see it for ourselves, then forever we're completely changed. We can't go back to where we are now, or where I know I am, where we seem to be, because it's just the difference of hearing about something and experiencing it for yourself. Once you know for sure and you have deep conviction, no one can ever convince you to do anything wrong. You won't ever believe any wrong thing that someone's telling you. You won't ever do wrong things like that again. So once you're out of that meditation, the way you used to see the world reasserts itself, but the difference is you understand now how it works. And you're not going to fall into the same traps that you've fallen into over and over for countless lifetimes. So if you can't get your mind to that level, you'll never be able to have that meditative experience of seeing emptiness directly. If you don't meditate daily, you'll never be able to do that. So you have to dedicate some part of your practice to getting up to that level. Working up to, I've heard different amounts of time, but in this class, in the recording, Geshe Michael says you must do an hour a day. If you don't, then there's no chance. And that doesn't mean that you have to do an hour all at once or that you have to be at an hour now, but working up to that. And if you keep at it daily, you will work up to that amount. If you just keep doing it every single day, whatever amount you can happily do now, and maybe at some point you start to just push yourself a little bit to get like to the next little hurdle, like a few more minutes, it'll naturally increase by itself. You don't have to do some big torture meditation for a while in order to get yourself to a certain level. So it will naturally expand to that point.
And is this like just concentration meditation, or are you doing analytical stuff too, or does it matter, or step by step, kind of, hey, work on your concentration first, then the next.
It would depend on, this is where you would work with a teacher on that sort of idea, but starting out, and I think on our website, if you search for meditation, there's the seven ingredient, like the seven limb meditation, where there's certain steps that are components of basically every practice that you would do in Tibetan Buddhism, and they're condensed down. So it's kind of like a way of cleaning your mind and doing your bringing your teacher to your meditation, and then rejoicing and dedicating. It's all compact, so you can do that really shortly. And then just do shamatha or a single pointed focus meditation combined in there. And then maybe total that's only 10 minutes or something like that. And then as your meditation expands, it'll probably expand along with adding different practices. And a good way to learn different practices are through retreats or visiting teachers that come, or working one-on-one with a teacher. And as you keep coming to classes, different practices will come up too, and you can work with those. But it's good to have the seven limb prayer, do that at least once a day. So if you do multiple small meditations or just two small meditations, you don't need to redo the seven limb prayer for every meditation. You would just do it in the morning meditation. So in your first one, you wouldn't wait till the last one to do it.
Really quick, I started before I came here. I started meditating on transcendental meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just doing it myself, and it's kind of, I think it's kind of like shamatha, right? It's just, or you.
I don't know, actually.
No. Well, you follow a mantra. Uh-huh.
I think
is it?
Yeah, that's how I've heard it.
Yeah, it's a single point of meditation.
With a mantra.
With a mantra.
Uh-huh.
The mantra is given to you by a lama as well, or a guru.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just chant the mantra, basically. But also you can do that with your with breathing as well. And then I discovered also that, you know, you have visualizing meditation,
mm-hmm.
which, where you create your world, or whatever you want to call it. But to me, one single point of meditation was really helpful. It's the one I still do today.
Yeah.
Besides the other ones, it's different.
Yeah, they are. They're different, and both very necessary too. So what makes the, because we were talking about some of the shamatha meditations, basically are just clearing the mind. And so what would make that different than something like the Qigong Mei that we're talking about here, which I don't know specifically what that meditation is, but I just know what it sounds like. The difference is the intention, which is, you know, makes the difference in most everything that we think, say, and do. So you would have the Bodhisattva intention. You would infuse that into your shamatha practice if you're just doing shamatha. Not that there's anything wrong with just doing a shamatha practice. I don't mean it like that. But if that's the practice you're doing, you at the very least you would have the motivation in the beginning and the dedication in the end. So you would have that. I'm doing this for the sake of all beings, that I may reach full enlightenment in this life. So you're infusing it with that idea. So it's not really just like, it's not like just a blank screen, because in some way, even if you're not consciously bringing it up over and over, it's still permeating the meditation. So it's changing it, and then you're dedicating at the end too. Okay.
Good question. Is there a depiction of the four must round on the wheel, or?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, right? Yeah. It's just, yeah, there's no form.
But I didn't find it online, and I don't remember it being on there.
Okay.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I didn't see it. Okay. So those are the four levels of the formless realm. And then the four kinds of meditation. Oh, the spacing got all messed up. The four kinds of meditation, which cause birth in the corresponding levels of the formless realm. The first one is non-conceptual, not conceptual, and non-conceptual, and not non-conceptual. So your body is in the desire realm. The mind is at an extremely subtle level called not conceptual, and not non-conceptual. Number two is limitless awareness meditation. Three is nothing at all meditation. And four is peak of existence meditation. So this is basically the levels that we are talking about, at least two through four. The names of the meditation are the same name as where you're born.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason the form realm and the formless realms can go back to hell realms and are not enlightened is because they haven't realized or they haven't seen emptiness directly. Is that the only reason?
Well, the reason that they're going back to the hell realm is because they're not doing any good deeds while they're like in the form realm.
Uh-huh.
They're just burning up all of that good karma that they planted, And so there's nothing left after that.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, because I haven't thought about this a lot before saying this, but my thinking as we're talking is that, yeah, I think if you've seen emptiness directly, you wouldn't be born in the form room.
Okay.
You wouldn't have that birth because it's not considered a good birth. So once you see emptiness directly, you'll see how many lives you have to live. And there, you'll see that you're going to always be surrounded by great teachers. You'll always be around the Dharma. So in that sense, we have that. So I don't totally know the answer to this part of it, but in some way we don't know where we are on the path.
Okay.
Like this could be our last lifetime. We don't know.
We wish.
So when you'll see all of those, all your future lives,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it'd be possible for you to be born in the form realm. Because you're not going to go down, you're on your way out, you're not going to be going down to hell, so you wouldn't be born there. That's my thinking through it right now.
Okay. So the formless realm. Realms
mm-hmm.
are these are enlightened beings. These are persons of not yet.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope. Still in the cycle of suffering. Yeah.
So this is in Bardon. I'm sorry.
Mm-mm.
No. Okay.
Different realm. Mm-hmm. It can, once we get into the Bardon description, it can sound kind of similar, but it's different. So, what page are we on? 5? Okay, we're fine. Okay, so we just went through the 4 types of meditation. So it's kind of weird to think that there would be a realm where you don't have a form, right? Where it's just mind. It's odd to think of in a way. So doesn't there have to be some kind of basis for the mind? And I mean, the answer would be basically no, there doesn't. Is Heather, am I physical or mental? So I have both. I have a body and a mind. But the context or the idea I is mental. In a way, it's what owns the body and the mind. So the mind stays on the continuation of the beings or the bodies. So Heather has a body and a mind, but the idea Heather is a concept. Right? Because what would be a proof of that, that the idea of Heather is a concept? Or you could insert any of your names there too.
Because you were born and then you're gonna die.
Because people experience you differently.
Yeah. People experience
you
me differently.
Experience you differently.
And if I wasn't a concept, or if it wasn't a label, then everybody would know who I am. It would be self-existent, Heather. It would be like when I was born, anyone who walked in would be like, oh, Heather's here. Look, it's Heather. So it's not that way. And we have to think about it, because even when we hear that, we still think, no, there really is a Heather. And it, you know, in one sense, I am here, there is this body. But this label, Heather, it's just a label that we're putting on ourselves. How else could people change their names? You couldn't change your name if you were self-existently what you were, you know, starting at this life. You would have to be from, like, when you were born. It couldn't just be that your parents had given you a name. So I think it can be a slippery idea. But it comes up really strongly as we're taught over and over, if you're ever threatened or someone insults you. Then you can really work with it and try to see, okay, where is this idea?
That person becomes self-existent.
Yeah. Where is this Heather that I'm so defending? Where is it exactly? That's when it comes up really strongly and you can work with it and try to find it. And it's not there anywhere. You have to go through the meditation, but it's not. It's not there the way we think it is. It is there in a sense. But in the way that we think about it, it's not there like that. It's like some being that exists on its own, whether or not anyone else is seeing it. It's like Heather's always here, whether or not I see it, whether or not someone else sees it. That's kind of how we think about ourselves. And if that were the case, then we would, if everyone was like that, we would know everybody when we saw them, because I would just know that's Bernardo. There's Jenny, and everyone who saw you would know that. It would be like that. So the idea, Heather, or, you know, myself, I have a body and I have a mind, but I'm a concept. The idea of Heather is a concept. So the difference between this realm, the formless realm, and the others is the subtlety. And in this realm, they're afflicted about their mind. They're having the same problems we have, but they're much more subtle.
So is there still ego grasping at this point, or no? Is there being described here, I don't feel that there is. So is there real...
What do you think? What do you mean by ego grasping?
Like this attachment, this, it's not there, right?
Yeah, not in the same way that we have it, for sure.
Right. But they're still suffering in this?
They're attached to their mind more. Because, well, that's all that they have to be attached to. So they're like, they're clinging onto that. Whereas we have body and mind, so we're attached to both.
That's a trip, though.
It is.
Because we've been told the reason why we have suffering is because of these bodies, right? It's because we're in this, right?
I don't know.
No?
I mean, it is where suffering comes to us through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Of the senses, our sense organs, all of that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because we've latched on to this as something that we have to serve to the end. And,
right.
You know, it's so, like the holiest. So it does come through this, but it's not because of this body. It's because of, you know, the karmic seeds that we're being forced to experience. And then in the formless realm, they're forced to experience suffering in a different way. So it's not that it's separate from the body, but the body wouldn't necessarily be the cause of it. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm...
A little bit. I mean,
explaining,
you know,
it clearly.
Little things I've read and listen to and around, like, enlightened beings, is that they are light bodies. They're formless.
Mm-hmm.
They can become human if they wanted to. They can go into become an animal, this and that. But essentially, they don't have, you know, and you're just all, this, they're just lying. It sounds similar to this, but you're saying this is another, they're still suffering here because there's still some kind of attachment.
I guess you're right.
Yeah.
I
know, it's trippy.
So what you said about ego grasping, right?
Yeah.
It's still there, I suppose, the mind.
The grasping, is that what you said?
The
yes.
The eye.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's just attached to the
mind.
To the mind. Yeah.
In a way, I feel like it's easier for us because something goes wrong with our body, we get like that taste of like, oh, I'm not my body, and then, oh, maybe I'm not my thoughts, and you know. But if you just have your mind.
Yeah. I know. It could be a lot harder.
Like the body gives you like an opportunity to practice, maybe, but just having a mind.
And that's why it's said that the human realm is the perfect realm to become enlightened as well. Because we have that perfect mix of suffering and goodness where we're pushed enough to practice. Whereas where we talked about the God realm, they're not pushed to practice because they're not having the suffering. So they're just sucking up and using all the last good karmic seeds that they have. Whereas here we have that push, but we also have the balance where we have like this great place to come and study Dharma, and our minds work well enough, and we have good healthy food and a place to sleep, and then we have a lot of suffering too, but it's this balance where it pushes us to practice just enough. So that's what it's always said about the human realm. And my tendency for a long time was to think of that as like, oh, that's pretty convenient that, you know, these teachings say the human realm is the best realm, and that's where we are. Like, there was some sense for me of like, yeah, right, you know? that is one possibility. And then the other possibility is that maybe everything is exactly perfect for us in this lifetime. So maybe we haven't always, well, not maybe, according to all the Buddhist teachings, we haven't always had a life like this. We've been born in every different realm possible. Every different hell realm, God realm, animal realm, everything. Every different level of human. And maybe it's that in this life, everything is just right and we're poised to be done with suffering. It could be that too. So I know my tendency, and I'm guessing other people's if I have it too, is to think like, is more cynical, like, okay, you know, everything's perfect for me right now. It's more like that. I don't know what that is. Like, low self-esteem, maybe? Or I don't know what you would call it. Cynicism? Something. Yeah. So we can go that way with some of the teachings. And then there's also the possibility maybe everything is perfect right now for us to get to the goal that we want to get to. So with the, let me see what page we're on. Okay, yeah, I think we have time. So with the Buddhas, when you're an enlightened being, you do still have a body. It's just a body made of light, which is really difficult because for us to think of, because our bodies aren't like that. They feel, you know, they're a lot more solid, and it sure seems like we have all these things inside of our body, and things go wrong, and, you know, it's hard to imagine being a body of light where there's no pain, we don't age, we don't die, and we're just automatically emanating, you know, whatever people need. We can emanate as an animal. We can emanate as a human being. We can emanate, like, for a second. We can emanate for a lifetime, whatever people need. So that's what the Buddhas are doing. And they have omniscience. So they know exactly what everyone needs. They're not just guessing. And I loved what Emily was talking about the week before last. She's teaching on Tuesdays, and she was talking about how enlightened beings, like, there's no thinking about anything. They just automatically know exactly the right things to say or to do. There's no planning. They don't have a calendar to keep track of things. They're not making lists, to-do lists. You just automatically are acting, saying, doing things. So if someone asks you a question, there's no thinking about it. It would just automatically be the exact right answer would come out. So there's not like this, oh God, like what do I say right now? What are they saying? You know, like you'd be completely present with someone, which would be an amazing experience. And then you wouldn't have to think about an answer or how to keep the conversation going or, you know, whatever we think about. It would just be flowing completely naturally, which sounds amazing. So like we were saying, the beings in each realm and then each realm itself are defined by their own particular hang-ups, their afflictions, their attachments. And the formless realm beings are attached to their minds. If you're reborn in these higher realms, you lose the opportunity to become enlightened, because we kind of mentioned this. But a human birth provides the best, perhaps only basis to become enlightened and permanently free from suffering. So the goal is not to be born in any of these realms. Okay, and then, I know this is so cute. Then the last thing we're going to go into, I think this is the last thing, yes, is the four ways of taking birth. So the four different ways that you take birth. The first one, say, Zuki.
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 And that's to be born complete with a mature body. And this one, this is the best way to be born. It doesn't hurt you and it doesn't hurt anyone else. And then the second one, say, Drusher Le Kewa.
Drusher Le Kewa.
Drusher Le Kewa. This is to be born from warmth and moisture. This would be like insect eggs when it rains in the summer. This is the second best way to be born. So it hurts you, but not your mother. First one doesn't hurt either. Second one hurts you, not your mother. The third one, say Nyelke.
Nyelke.
Nyelke. This is born from a womb. This is the third best way to be born. It hurts the mother and it hurts you once.
What if she had a C-section?
Yeah.
I had this for long.
And the fourth is Gongki.
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 This is born from an egg. And this is the worst way to be born. It hurts the mother and it hurts the baby twice. Apparently when you're laid and then when you're hatching. So if you go through the reading, they say that human beings have taken all these types of birth. And from the end of this third chapter, it talks about how some beings know where they're going to take birth or take their next birth. The end of the third chapter of the Abhidharma describes different levels of awareness when you enter the womb. You know what's going on when you're there and then remember when you come out. I kind of think I've heard people say things like that, that they remember. I have like a terrible memory. I don't remember childhood at all. But so this type of person who would remember that, remember what's going on when they're in the womb and when they come out, that type of person has really great karma, such great karma that it's as like when they're born, they would become president of the world or king of the world or something like that. And usually it would be by popular consent. The whole world loves this type of person. And supposedly, Lord Buddha turned this down during his search for enlightenment. So these beings know what's going on when they enter the womb. And then there are self-made arhats. Their awareness of what's going on extends to the period of staying in the womb. Buddhas are aware of the whole process. And then people born from eggs aren't aware of anything. I think it means how humans are born. And there's a debate in the Abhidharma about why the Buddha would choose to be born in a womb. And the main teaching on this is that he went through this whole big charade in order to teach people. Most people, so the way he's teaching people is, you know, look, I went through exactly what you went through. I did these steps, and this is how I became enlightened. And most people don't teach this chapter at all, because a lot of it is unacceptable to modern thinking. But it's important to learn about the realms.
Number one is when you become enlightened.
When you're born complete with a mature body. I think we go into this next class. The only example I can think of is in the hell realm. But yeah, where you're just born fully formed. It's not like you have a hell mother and a hell father or something like that. You're just there. I can't remember. There might be others. We'll go into it more. And I'm pretty sure with the Buddha, because I think he was born from his mother's side. I can't remember the story now. But I think he was still born from a womb, because I believe she was pregnant with him. I don't think he just, like, you know, came out one night.
Yes, the father went to an ass, and the wise men told him that this was going to be a king or a
Buddha. Yeah. But I think he went and asked when he was already born, right?
Oh, that's true.
I'm pretty sure, though, she was pregnant with him. Because I was thinking maybe he was one that was born complete, but I don't think so. Because he had like a, and it says a mature body, so I think that implies, you know, an adult. So the only example I can think of right now is the in the hell realms. Which is kind of weird, because it's saying that that's the best way to be born. So we'll go into this a little bit more too, though, in the next classes.
Because once you hit bottom, you just have to go up.
So I think most of us can see the possible problem with getting into a spiritual practice where we just count our breath or watch our thoughts. In and of itself, that's not the goal. And we already talked about this some. But it could be that we're trying to develop extraordinary concentration to then focus on other objects, and that's okay. But in and of itself, that's not the goal. So our mind itself is collapsing in a way. Like, we're getting older and older. Our mind most likely goes down and down and down as we get older and older. And there's this idea that at the time of death that we can reach enlightenment then. And I think we've touched on this a bunch of times, and other teachers have talked about this here too, but there's this idea called POA, where you throw your consciousness at the time of death and you reach enlightenment. And basically the bottom line is, don't wait for that. I mean, it sounds to me incredibly risky, but I think I've heard people talk about it as though that's their plan, like they're waiting for the time of death, which, I mean, when are you going to be more freaked out, most likely, than at the time of death? It's going to be incredibly hard to focus, most likely. Even in our day-to-day, when we have relatively smooth lives, it can be difficult to focus. So we might as well do it now, and while we have the bright, clear mind, while we have the time, we're not too old yet, we're not too young, or we're not interested, you know, for the most part. So now, while we're healthy, we're young, we can concentrate, we have to do it now. Don't put it off for any longer. Don't push it off for other things. Just do it now. So that's what we'll end with tonight, is not thinking that waiting for the time of death is like some shortcut or something like that. Because I've heard it presented like that too. And I think of it more, if for some reason we practiced and practiced and practiced, and in this lifetime we didn't make it to the goal, then that's another opportunity maybe, or another point where it's possible, but I wouldn't count on that. We should all do it now while we can, while we have the time, we have the money, we have the resources, we have everything that we need. We should just get it done now. So not waiting for some long shot. And also, that's kind of assuming that we don't have some like really quick death, because we could. That's assuming that you have like any sort of space to do that practice. Like any one of us could be instantly killed in a car crash. It could happen really fast, and so waiting for that time, really risky.
If you had the chance to choose, how would you do that?
Probably, you mean like what would be the cause or how?
No. I mean, my question comes from I heard that at the time of dying, you have to be like really calm or meditating and concentrating. So it would be maybe better if you know you're going to die like 3 months before, so you prepare and then just kind of like go. Because when you die like in a crash accident or something, it's just kind of like, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, but I always think, well, I would rather just be, you know, like everybody else, sleeping, heart attack, and then I don't know. But also, at that point, you might die very easily, but you don't know what happened. You're not prepared. You don't know. So that's why, I guess that's why you meditate every day, just to
practice.
Be prepared. Right?
Yeah. And then I would think like, I always think dying like painlessly in like a comfortable, like beautiful place by the ocean with surrounded by like spiritual practitioners who really know what they're doing and aren't going to like freak you out, and that's how I would.
I think of it.
I'd
die like that now, but in the past, I was thinking just sleep.
Just fast.
Move on.
Yeah.
Whatever you were.
I think that's what I used to think too.
Yeah,
but who knows?
You're right. With the diagnosis, it's like an opportunity in a way.
But also could be very painful. So, would that help you practice or not? So
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think with, like, you don't want to be totally spaced out, so there's pain meds where I think they can manage your pain now really well, mm-hmm. but I don't know what kind of quality of mind you have.
Exactly, you could be like, you know, just, like, dreaming, you know, just, how do you say that word?
Hallucinating.
Yeah.
Venerable Tenzin talked a little bit about it on the weekend on death and dying. And in, because they have actually have a hospice down in Santa Cruz area. And
yeah.
So, but she said that they definitely make sure that they have some pain medicine and pain management. Because, yeah.
Some painkillers?
There is some pain management.
Yeah.
That's done, so.
Only yeah, because if it's too bad.
Oh, really? It's the only one, actually, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or at least, I think, yeah, the only one out here.
Amazing.
Make your reservations.
I know. I gotta come away.
Yeah.
Okay, I was gonna look up what the meditation is on the homework, but the Wi-Fi isn't working. I think we'll just finish up the meditation. We only have a few minutes anyway. Land in your body again. Feel your energy relax and melt down out of your head. Get this sense that you're opening up your being and letting all of the wisdom of the teaching sink in. Any way that they're going to, maybe ways that you're aware of, ways that you're not. I get this sense as the energy of this wisdom teaching sink in, your body starts to transform into that of an enlightened being. So there's no more flesh or blood, bones. You're made of beautiful, shimmering rainbow light. Sitting in deep meditation, effortlessly helping all beings. Think about it or make any effort. Automatically there. Helping each being the way they need it. And it's as though your whole existence is saturated with a deep love for all beings. There's no discomfort, there's no unhappiness, there's no dissatisfaction. nations after doing their work, bringing all beings to enlightenment. The light withdraws back into you. And in this room right now, strong commitment, that is the reason for the practice. For the sake of all beings, I'll reach that form in this lifetime. Completely doable. And then I'll offer all the merit our closing prayers.
Sashi
Puki Chukchi Mito Trum Riva Blinchi Nyende Gyanpati Sangi Shindu Mikte Uwagi Jokun Amdak Shingla Chupasho Yidam Guru Radna Mandala Kandiryatayani
Gewa
Ti Gewa Ku Sunam Yeshe Soksokshi Sunam Yeshe Lejumwe Tampakuni Topashu.